Welcome back to the Doomer Bloomer podcast with Will S. We are talking about the hero's journey, how to get back on the way of becoming a doomer to a bloomer, getting unstuck in life. We're talking to people who have been through the ringer of life. They want to tell their stories. They're not necessarily all entrepreneurs. Some are, some aren't. Today, I'd like to welcome to the podcast the lovely Morgana Ray. She is a financial alchemy coach based in Long Beach, California. She lives with her husband, a lot of cats and guitars. And she has agreed to come on the podcast, talk about her book, her story, how she came up with Money Honey, her coaching program, and how she helps people get unstuck with their relationship to money and life and everything in between. How are you doing today, Morgana?
I'm doing really wonderfully. Thank you so much.
All right. So just tell me a little bit about your journey. You know, how did you, start coaching?
Oh, I love that. I love that question. So I was the kid who had the talent for making the adults feel better about themselves, like giving I was one of those weird kids who totally inappropriately just sort of had the need to like help the adults screw their heads on straight and feel better about themselves and deal with life better. I had that talent from a too young age. I also had lots of very, very deep thoughts and questions from a very, very young age. What is it to be human? What are we? Why are we here? What is the nature of this universe we live in? And how do we have a better experience while we're here? And these are thoughts that I was thinking since childhood. So I ran away to college because I had no circus skills, but I was good in school, even after a catastrophic car accident and a coma and a year and a half of homelessness. I graduated from high school with this crazy national merit scholarship in math and science. And I'm not even really good with numbers, but I'm good with patterns. And I ran away to college basically to save my life. This isn't even the story that I'm here to share about. This is backstory. I get on tangents, but it always ties up in the end.
No worries.
And I studied religion. I went to a fancy schmancy private East Coast college and got a degree in religion, which freaked my father out. Why can't you? He actually said to me, why couldn't you like have a real major like government or English? And the punchline is I actually use my religion studies all the freaking time. The mythology, the stories, the archetypes, I love them and I use them professionally all the time. Ha ha, joke's on you, Dad. Even though he's dead, I'm still like, pointing my finger at him. Ha ha. So anyway, so how I got here was after college, after deciding not to become a religion professor because I had a boyfriend who told me it was that would be stupid, and I was 21 years old and believed what boyfriends would tell me, I landed back home in Los Angeles where I came from and pursued acting because I'd always loved that. Had a terrible time of it. Got nowhere with it. But, and this is the interesting thing, it led me to coaching. And there's this fantastic 20th century philosopher physicist who us old Gen Xers know, Buckminster Fuller. Maybe some of you kids do, geodesic dome guy. And he would talk about what is our purpose? He was like me asking those deep questions. Why are humans here? You know, what are we? All that. He said we're problem solvers. And he was asking the question, why do we set goals? Because we set the goal, I'm going to make $1 million. And then we get there and life looks the same. And it's like, yay, and now I have to come up with a new goal. So why do we even bother having goals? Because every time you achieve a goal, the goalpost moves. So why do we? And I loved his answer, both metaphoric, and he comes at it from a real mathy way. He talked about bees going from flower to flower to flower, and bees think that they're going to pick up nectar. Right? That's their day job. They go to the flower and they pick up the nectar and they bring it back to the hive, just like we go to work and we do our thing and we make the money and we bring it back home. But while the bees are getting the nectar, they're also getting their feet covered with pollen and they're pollinating the planet to make it livable for everybody else. So their real purpose is pollination. But they're only aware of the nectar. So Buckminster Fuller had this idea that our real purpose is always at a 90-degree angle from what we're pursuing. And then when we change our goal, our purpose shifts. So I thought, I want to be an actress because I'm obviously very, very dramatic. But the purpose of pursuing the acting was that's how I landed in coaching. So during one of those dark nights of the soul, which was basically every night that I was a coach for 10 years, but about 6 years into it, I got this flyer inviting me to take this program for entertainment professionals. I saw a little quote by a friend of mine who had gone on to become a name. And because I'm like a sucker for every sales trick in the book, including social proof, I said, yes, of course. And I had a life-changing experience in that I suddenly discovered that I was not, as an actor, the child at the grown-up table. Like, I always felt like I was powerless and everybody else, the directors, the writers, the producers, they were the grown-ups and I was the child. I realized that they were the children too. They were going out there begging for money, begging for jobs. They were just like me, trying to get their next gig. And it was kind of a seismic shift for me. That was like very, very leveling. And I started to see how I could help them. And that's sort of how I became a coach, was in the entertainment industry. I was the connector. I was just oh, you need to meet this person. And then I became a coach for them. And like within weeks, I had clients who were no credits, booking regular roles on hit TV series, selling films, winning awards. And I kind of got this reputation for working magic because I do. I'm just very intuitive. I was always very good at just kind of intuitively knowing what somebody needed. And how to connect them. And I would do this as a volunteer. Starting in 96, they were paying a company and I was just coaching because being an actress was so insecure and so needy and so self-absorbed that I needed a vacation from my own self-absorption to focus on other people just to like feed my soul. Yeah. And after a few years of that, I was so much happier helping other people than being an actor. And I was getting all these jobs. And every job was making me more miserable, which wasn't how it was supposed to go. So I wanted to see, well, I wonder if I could make a living at this. And everybody said yes. And I went and I got a bunch of very fancy certifications, and I like worked really hard for a year to get all the hours and pass all the tests to get my first like real bona fide certification. Then I just started piling them on. And the punchline is, I had these celebrity clients. I had great marketing. I had a great reputation. I had mountains of testimonials.
Yeah.
I was delivering results and I couldn't make money at it. So I would then fly out of town and, you know, month after month after month to get more trainings and more certifications and take more classes on like how to help clients, how to get clients. I had a coach and I was living in Los Angeles, one of the most expensive cities in the world, making $100 a month. And even that was looking sketchy. So I was living on credit cards and borrowing money and honestly living on shame because I could produce these results, but I had this secret and this panic. And I kept taking more classes on marketing. And I had been helping entertainment people with their marketing for a decade already. Like I was really good at marketing. It didn't matter. I had people who wanted to hire me and I had like this superhuman power to repel their money. Like I should have my own superhero shirt with a giant R on the chest for repulsion.
So were you just not closing the sales? Is that my
understanding? Oh, it was even better than that. It was even better than that. Because I took a class on overcoming sales objections. And I'm the girl who was a National Merit Scholar with a major head injury. So I'm like a damn good student. I took a class on overcoming sales objections and 7 people in a row, for anybody who doesn't know what that means. It's like there are classes that will teach you what to say if somebody says, I can't afford it or I'd love to, but blah, 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 blah. And I was such a good student that for 7 people in a row, I expertly overcame their sales objections. And punchline, 7 people in a row didn't show up for the first call and didn't pay me. And that's when I ran out of hope. Like that was when I just like, what? I felt so angry.
Right. I'm sensing this is not your first setback though.
Oh, no. Like the reason I talk about money and why it's like such the biggest cosmic joke that I'm like really well known with clients on every continent except Antarctica for being this wealth coach and money coach is that was never what I intended. It is never what I aspire to do. I'm way more into like spiritual and happiness and love and life purpose and self-expression and all that and save the world. Like that's my thing. So how did I end up coaching money is because I was so bad at, I had to solve my own problem. And my solution was so weird and different from everything else out there because I had tried everything. You know, I had all of the, oh my God, it's just, and I live in like the capital of personal development in Los Angeles. So you've got, you know, the hypnotists and the you have tons of coaches. And of course, I was always working with coaches and you have the woo-woo people who will rebirth you or change your diet or wave their hands and change your DNA and like all of it. And they're all my friends. Yeah. And nothing was working. And meanwhile, I'm taking the classes on marketing and selling and people want to hire me. And something was way, way off. And it had to be that dramatic for me to shift. By the way, I don't think it always has to be like super dramatic. Like we can catch things before they become disasters. But there's also another piece is that I failed at everybody's law of attraction. I had the vision boards, beautiful vision boards and the mantras and all that stuff. And nothing was helping. And I was trying so freaking hard.
Trying.
Oh, and yeah, I really,
rather than.
It was that after that 7th person stood me up, ghosted me, which was also a lot like my dating life. And that's a parallel story later on. But oh my God, it was just the disappointment. If I had a client who didn't even give me the courtesy of showing up and had never paid, and that had happened 7 times in a row. And I'm sure there are huge metaphysical meanings behind the number 7, including that I was born on a 7 day. And I was so angry and hurt and frightened because I was a grown-up already, you know, and needed to support myself. And there, I didn't see how that was going to happen. And I had done everything. So I felt so betrayed by life, by the universe. I felt really hated by the universe. And I hated the universe back, and I really just didn't want to be alive. I didn't want to play. I was exhausted. I'd done all of the marketing, all the public speaking, all of the enrollment sessions, all of the classes. Not only was I not making money, but I was spending money to not make money. And every promise, get good grades, take this class, deliver value, get testimonials, and then you'll make money, lies. And I just broke down and cried and screamed and cried until I had nothing left. Because this is the thing about money is our value in the world. Like, people give a lot of respect to the worst, stupidest, meanest, baddest people on the planet because they have a lot of money. Let's not pretend that isn't so. And I don't care what side of the political, ideological spectrum you're on, you'll find your bad guy, right? Our right to exist, all of it, it's so tied up with money. So money goes to a very, very deep core existential place. Are we valued? Are we worthy? Are we loved? Are we safe? Are we powerful or powerless? Like, all of it screams. When the topic of money comes up. So that was where I was. And when I completely cried myself out, and this is an interesting thing about when there's the psychological, I'm going to get all intellectual now, and I do that. there's this psychological dynamic called enantiodrama, one of those weird things that I picked up in my gazillion certifications and trainings and all that. And enantiodrama is when you fully express an emotion, the opposite begins. So if you fully express your despair and you just express it to its limit, hope will arise. So when I was just cried out, I had these two thoughts, you know, that little quiet back of the head voice. That was one. Maybe money needed to be my next area of spiritual growth. Doesn't mean it has to be yours, but like, spirituality is like, it's in my oxygen, just the way I was raised and where I was raised. And it's like, well, maybe if I hide money in the spiritual box, I can deal with it. Also, I was thinking of how much, you know, more good I could do in the world if I wasn't held back by this limitation. That, by the way, is not what changed my life at all. But I also got curious about what the heck is going on inside of me that can't be with money, because this doesn't make sense on paper. It doesn't make sense. So there's got to be something inside of me that can't be with money. And I don't know what it is because I like to buy things. So what is going on inside of me that can't be with money? And I was curious about that. And a day or two later, I had my next session with my coach, which again is insane. Like, I don't have money approaching rent, but I still made sure that I had a coach.
Right.
Thank goodness, because it saved my life and it's why I'm here right now.
Yeah.
I had this lovely coach. I'd been working with him for months. I was doing everything that he suggested and none of it was working, and it wasn't his fault. And there was something special about this next session because I was in such a dark, despairing place. And he, somewhere where, who knows where it came from, but he asked me this weird, inspired question that changed my life. He asked me, after hearing me pour out my soul, He said the weirdest thing. He said, if your money was a person, who would your money be? And because I was so overwhelmed by all this like sorrow and hurt and emotion that it was like my rational mind didn't even have time to think about it, which is a good thing, because I instantly saw this money person in my mind's eye, who is this big, scary, dirty, violent, terrifying biker dude who I didn't want to have anything to do with. And I never imagined that I felt that way about money. But I could see myself at some live event with my eye on him all the time. By the way, nothing against bikers. It's this one. But so it's like I have my eye on him the whole time to create distance between us. And that was my light bulb moment. Holy crap. I don't know like your language preferences. So I'm really censoring myself.
You can say shit. If you
okay. I'm more like an F-bomb person. I really like to talk like a sailor, but I could feel my whole body recoiling and I was shocked. Oh my God, if this is money and I'm reacting this way, no wonder it's not in my life. It doesn't matter what I do consciously or how hard I work or how well I do it. If I, on some gut level, need to create distance as if my life depends on it, and that's 24/7, I'm always going to be pushing it away. And that's unsustainable. I can't do that. And I can never have money in my life if it's that guy. That guy had to be gone. That was my first money monster.
This is going on 27 years ago now?
That was actually March of 2003. So I started coaching in 96.
Okay.
And I had this shift in March of 2003. And what's so funny about it is, and I'm only like halfway through the process, is the next day, 4 people hired me at double what I had ever charged before. So it like worked that fast. So I knew that I couldn't have money in my life if it was this guy, for obvious reasons. There's just, when we talk about money, and money is such a loaded issue, but when we talk about money, it's like an abstract concept. Money doesn't grow on trees. Money is the root of all evil. It's harder for a rich man, blah, blah, blah. All these ideas, you know?
Yeah.
Because money doesn't exist. No, it doesn't grow on trees because it's imaginary.
Well, it's energy.
Well, yes and.
Yeah.
Yes and. It's energy. It's value. It's love. It's measurement. It's a tool. Mm-hmm. It's all these things. Deepak Chopra called it a divine field of abundance. Yay. Fabulous. I don't know how to have a relationship or a conversation with the divine field of abundance. I've never gone out to lunch with the divine field of abundance. So,
what is that? What is the divine field of abundance?
What are you going to do with that? Lovely, true, and so what? I can't use that. But I know what it's like to have relationships with people. I know what it's like to have really bad relationships with people and really good relationships with people. And by the way, for those of you who've never had any good relationships with people, this process that I'm teaching that's about money with air quotes has a really good track record of dramatically rewiring you and how you have relationships with other people and really improving that area of your life. I call it money, but it's honestly, full disclosure, it's not about money. My client Anna Gatman made $1.2 million within 4 months after doing my retreat last year in September. And I've got loads and loads and loads of examples like that. So it does. And she's even coming back to assist my retreat in June. So I like to go to San Miguel de Allende, Mexico. So I do retreats. It does actually work with money, which is amazing, but it's not, doesn't just work with money. It works with relationships. It works with health because it's all a microcosm of our relationship with life and existence. I like to focus on money because money touches absolutely everything in life. And it's our number one excuse as human beings for anything we can't have, do, or be. And that's not just people who don't have money. I've coached billionaires who money is still a monster. They're afraid they're going to lose it. It gets in the way of relationship.
Yeah.
It becomes a headache. They become a target. So, you know, it's wherever you are on the spectrum, from nothing to tons, you want to have a really good, safe, happy, loving relationship that supports love, lifestyle, and legacy. Okay. That's what's sustainable. Make the world a better place. Then you have no reason to, like, keep it away or get rid of it when you have it. Where were we? Okay, got rid of the monster.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that I could have money in my life. So, by the way, I am telling you a story, but there are six steps embedded in the story, and I'm going to break it down for you, like, because I learn very linear, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, but I teach more flowy.
Okay. Yeah, I feel that.
Because I don't want you to have an intellectual experience. It doesn't work when it's an intellectual experience. This is a full person because I'm really speaking to your unconscious, because that's where your attitudes and your beliefs and your behavior come from 24/7. So what I want to do is I want to teach you how to talk to your unconscious and change your agreement and rewire your response so that you can get better results. That's the sneaky thing that I'm doing. Cat's out of the bag. So step number one is uncover the root cause. I'll go over how to do that. Step number two is you personify the root cause as your monster. You met mine, the big, scary, dirty, violent biker. Step number three is you get rid of the monster by any means necessary. And when I got rid of my biker, I was aware of, it was sort of like this. Yay! Oh, crap. I just got rid of my only relationship with money and I live in Los Angeles and that's not going to work long term or short term.
Or at all, yeah.
Right?
It's yeah.
Like, I have to have a relationship with money. And if the only relationship with money I've ever known felt abusive and soul crushing and made me feel less than and got in the way of love and caused fights and causes terrible things in the world and is an abuser, what am I going to do? So I needed something totally different. And I asked myself, well, who could I want in my life so much that I could want this person in my life, even if it's money? Like, we can overlook the money part if this person is so awesome. And then I can, like, trick myself into having money in my life. And that's the way I think, really. So I'm asking myself, well, who could I want in my life so much I'd be willing to have this person in my life, even if it's money? And because my experience of the monster was so dramatic and his absence felt so dramatic, it was like, oh my God, there's this big gaping hole in the force, you know, and I don't want some like monster coming back to fill this space. Because it was like all my neurology was lit up that way. When I asked myself, who could I want so much? The new relationship just sort of appeared spontaneously. And I'm not a good visualizer. If you ask me to sit by a stream, I will spend the next 45 minutes trying to decide which stream. And that's very distracting. So what I like is when it just shows up. I also have tricks, especially for the non-visually inclined, to like help you get there, because that can be tricky. But so I asked myself, and so who showed up was this tall, dark, handsome, romantic, oh my God, cute man in a tuxedo with holding a bouquet of red flowers, who was like there for a date. Like he wanted to take me out on the town and woo me. And I could feel how much he loved me. And I'm totally, totally aware of how ridiculous everything I'm saying sounds. So just imagine how ridiculous it felt the first time. But it also felt really good. It's like, oh my God, he's cute and he's sweet and he's safe and he's in love with me and I like him. And I also had the sense that he wanted to be with me. And I'd been breaking his heart for years by pushing him away, treating him like a monster. And that's important because what I'm not, this is not some like weird, sexy spin on the movie The Secret, where you're going to sit on the couch and your money, honey, fairy is just going to go off and shower you with riches. That's nonsense. That's not why you have a body. It's not why you're on this planet. And it sort of gives your power away and becomes a new monster.
Yeah.
And the whole point is for you to have the power in your life. So I had this like weird awareness that, oh my God, he really wants to be with me. And I'm the gatekeeper. I'm the gatekeeper. All these years I thought he was. I'm the gatekeeper. I decide if he comes or not. So, but I didn't know how to allow him to stay with me. And so newsflash, it's really helpful when it's like this cute, adorable person, because if you ask a question, you get an answer. So step four was I met my money honey. Step five is I had a conversation. And my first conversation was something like, what do you need from me so you can stay with me the way you want to? And his first time response was, I need you to love me and stop treating me like a monster. And I felt the vulnerability in that, the hurt. And it was like, I didn't want to be that mean person. There's that whole Reddit, am I the asshole? You know, thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm going to look at it, yeah, I was. I was. So I wanted to be nice to him because he was worthy of this love and kindness and appreciation. So I thought about, well, what does that look like to love you and stop treating you like a monster? And I just started looking, you know, and all of this is happening within a matter of minutes. It's like, oh, so every time somebody asked me what I charged, I would freak out with so much guilt and anxiety that I was going to hurt them and that it was wrong to take their money because I wanted to help them and they couldn't afford me. And I was charging so little and all that. And it was like, oh, so I was like acting as though money was a monster. So next time he brings me a gift, which looks like a client, instead I'll respond with a big thank you. And what will that look like? I'll state my fee. And I got to try it out four times the next day. People just like, I got four contacts from people who wanted to hire me, and I could feel everything bubbling up inside of me, all of my old patterns of like, don't you want a sample session? And what was ridiculous was one of those people I'd given a sample session to 6 months ago. They didn't need a sample session. They wanted to hire me and I had to let them, which sounds insane, but that's where I'm starting from. I had to really, truly bite my tongue, sit on my hands and shut up.
Yeah.
Tell them what I charge, let them get silent as they figure out how to pay it, and let them pay me. And I was not good at that in the beginning, but I got to try it out four times in a row, and I gradually got better, and I have made millions of dollars since. But I started out as bad as you can possibly be.
Yeah.
And I would say the biggest thing is to put like a little cap on this is that money issues and love issues are so tied up in a bundle.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
and you know, just allowing yourself to receive. And sometimes, by the way, this is why I like to stockpile testimonials. And I get like these emails spontaneously from all over the world just about every day of like how my work has helped people and change their lives. I was, you know, telling you about one before we started recording. And I need that because my opinion of myself is going to vary like minute by minute by minute because I'm a person and I'm a woman. And what helps is to get out of like my own head and my own neuroses and take a breath and tune into this imaginary money honey. And look at the situation through his eyes. look at myself through his eyes, look at what I charge through his eyes. We can even negotiate, and then we find that happy number. And I know my money honey is a guy, but it doesn't matter. Like, your money honey can be a he, a she, or a they. It's just the flavor that, you know, gives you butterflies and makes you happy and fills your heart with love.
Okay. On that note, how did you find and meet your husband?
Well, it started when I was 4.5 years old and I chased Brian Patterson under the piano on his 5th birthday to steal a kiss. And 40 years later, I was like 45 years old and still single with a perfect, perfect track record of romantic failure. And I was teaching my money monster, money honey thing a lot. And I would hear myself say things like, you know, if you're doing everything you're supposed to do and you aren't getting the results you really desire and deserve, the odds are you are probably protecting yourself from what you want and you don't even know it. And you have really good reasons to protect yourself. And you need to look under the hood and find out what the monster is that you're really protecting yourself so that you can make what you want safe. Yeah. And I really deeply believe change happens at the speed of safety, which means it's insane how quickly things can change as soon as you make it safe. And I would hear myself teach this. And I started getting that really annoying voice in the back of my head saying, you know, Morgana, that sounds like your romantic situation. Because I was doing everything right, hiring all the coaches, taking all the classes, and they were all telling me to do what I was already doing, which was infuriating, validating and infuriating. And so I finally broke down. I was like, oh, I have to dig up a love monster. Ugh. And I did. And it was so much bigger and scarier and more horrible than any money monster I ever had. It was like as big as the universe. And it was so clear to me that my experience of love in my life with a violent, alcoholic, bipolar, narcissistic mom and lots of relationship stories, that love wanted to kill me. That love was, love existed to raise my hope and dash it until I no longer wanted to live. And it was really big and it was really scary and it was really hard to destroy that monster. And I met my husband 2 months later on OkCupid. And I'm so in love. Like, this was our 10-year anniversary of our first date is this August. Our 8-year anniversary of our first wedding is in May. And we just celebrated our 7-year anniversary of moving in together a year after we started getting married, just a few days ago. And I have this new theory that when you've been like working so hard for something and sending out so many ships and putting so much energy into getting something, but you've been blocking it because you've been protecting yourself from this terrible monster that wants you to die, wants you to choose death and not want to live. When you get rid of the monster and you make it safe and you take down the wall, it's like all that energy that you put out there is still there wanting to come to you. And so not only did my husband show up 2 months later, but he was the one who came up with the idea, hey, let's get married 100 times in 100 countries. Because I had also for many years been saying, I want to travel the world with the love of my life. Because I was like going to the most beautiful, romantic, exciting places in the world to speak on changing your relationship with money. And I'd be there alone. Oh. And so my husband loves to travel. He like checked all the boxes on my list of what I wanted and way more. Like, I would have settled for so much less. Let me tell you, so much less. And he came up with this idea, let's get married 100 times in 100 countries. So we are 26 weddings deep into this game, this journey. And it's like all that energy that I put out there showed up in this like hot, cute, romantic, generous, sweetie pie package. Like, so it all in him. All that effort I put out, just it came back.
Yeah. And I just like going a little bit backwards, but like, how did you overcome that relationship? Like, because we often attract what we don't want by our relationship to the love that we've experienced. So your earlier years with love obviously weren't so great. Is that the vibe that I'm picking up on?
Yeah, like I actually did have one wonderful boyfriend for a good stretch. Great, great guy. I'll just love him as a person for the rest of my life. But yeah. We shouldn't have gotten married, and we didn't get married. It wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
Devin, my husband, is the first time I've ever gotten married. We started at 47 and I'm 55. So you bring up some great points. First of all, I think that we're so much smarter at midlife, especially women, because I can only speak from having a woman's body. I also know that my husband was a complete disaster, and it's a good thing that I didn't meet him when he was younger. Because he would have been hot, cute, charming like he is now and would have destroyed me. Because he was a total mess. It takes us time to grow up. You know, it's like I went on the sociopath ride. I went on the alcoholic addict ride a couple times, probably more than a couple. I went on the narcissist. I went on all these different rides, you know.
Yeah.
And I learned, it took me a while to learn how to spot it and to be honest with myself. I actually had a turning point when I was 35. Oh, no, 37. I'm about 8 years before it was 2005. So 7 years before I met Devin. Where during one of the coach trainings I was taking, because, you know, I just love those. I was taken on this timeline therapy, something that I do now, where I went back in time to find the root cause of this, you know, what's wrong with me that I can't, you know, have a happy relationship with it, when it's the thing that I've wanted the most in the world since my first Disney princess movie. By the way, that's one of the reasons why so many of us are really, really terrible at relationships when we're young. I did not have good examples from my parents. And like, what did I learn about relationship? Disney movies and really bad romance novels. Not
reality.
Place to learn, right?
No, they're...
It's also a pattern in my family, going back to my great-grandmother, that first marriages were terrible, but everybody nailed it on the second marriage. So I decided when I was 7 years old that it would be more efficient to skip the first marriage and just wait for the second husband, which I did.
You decided at seven?
I decided at seven in the second grade. I remember going through that process in my head. And I did.
Very mature seven-year-old.
I was a weird seven-year-old. Remember, I was the kid who was like, you know, helping adults sort out their lives. So really. So by the time I met my husband, I had like this vision where I had been going on dates for years and I would see the expiration date above the guy's head. And for those of us who are cis hetero women, we have a bit of an advantage because guys are like really easy to read. I mean, unless they are like, you know, super intentional con artists, and they are. But even then, like if you are really willing to see and acknowledge the red flags. There are always red flags. And I just made a decision to get really honest with myself and to stop pretending not to know for 2 years what I knew by the second date and honestly knew by the first date. So I became a one date wonder. And every now and then I'd meet a guy who would also be obviously temporary, but he might be fun for 3 months. And then for some reason, it would just completely fall apart. And my husband was the first person who never had an expiration date. And I remember our first date went on for like 6 hours. And I wasn't madly in love with him, but he was cuter than his photo, thank goodness. He's really cute and chose just a really bad photo. And he was in like Greenland on a out in the snow with one of those like fuzzy round hoods. So it looked like he had a round bald head with a big red nose. And that was his dating profile photo. But there, when he wrote a really good letter, and when I went deep enough into his profile, there was a photo of him singing like that. There was like, well, if he looks like that, that's cute. And that's who showed up on the date. But what really struck me was the whole time that we were just talking, and we were both just in a bar drinking water, eating pistachio nuts for 6 hours, probably ordering a little bit of food to not be bad people. I didn't feel like I needed to perform. And that, by then, I figured out maybe a year earlier that all those times that I was so nervous and giddy and gay and bullshit was because the guy wasn't safe. And that's
how the social mask that you put on.
It was because the person, it wasn't me, it was because the person I was with wasn't safe.
Yeah.
But with Devin, I never felt like I needed to put on any kind of show. And he was cute enough for a second date. And he just kept getting cuter and cuter and cuter and cuter. So I've become really passionate about this idea that midlife love is way, way, way better. Because we're stupid when we're young. Like, we're really brain smart, but we're, and there are exceptions. There are people who, you know, are not me. Like my friend since childhood, Nina,
yeah,
married a guy she met in college, and they've been happy for like almost 40 years. She nailed it.
The theme of this podcast is doomer, a doomer bloomer.
Yeah, no, right? I'm the late bloomer. I am such a late bloomer, and I, you know, my client Perry, after four failed marriages, is finally in her right relationship. She met him in her 60s.
Wow.
Catherine met her husband in her 50s, about 2 weeks after I did my retreat with her, because relationship with money is also relationship with love, because it's your relationship with yourself and all of existence. We just call it money because money is such a very elegant boogeyman, because it touches every area of life, but it has that ripple effect on all your other relationships. We've been on the rides, and we start to become aware, especially around 40 for me, was like, oh my God, I don't have all the time in the world to waste on abusing myself with abusive guys. And that's such a gift. And some people will get it earlier. Some people will get it later, like me. But there's, I think, a self-respect and a sense of really treasuring the little bit of time that we have. And we start to really learn what's important and what we need and what doesn't really matter. Along my journeys and certifications, I was introduced to the teachings of a Dr. John Gottman, who was the first relationship therapist to actually study couples empirically behind one-way mirrors for like 20 years. And he saw patterns. And what is the difference between marriages that stick together happily forever and those that break up? And relationships that break up typically have 5 to 7 irreconcilable differences. Big stuff that's never going to be worked out. And relationships that stay together forever typically have 5 to 7 irreconcilable differences, really big stuff. Big stuff that's never going to be resolved. Politics. Are we going to have children? Where are we going to live? Religion. Some like really core stuff that's never ever going to be resolved. So if you leave this person, the next person, 5 to 7 irreconcilable differences. The difference is how you treat each other. And there's this sort of magical ratio of at least 5 to 1. 5 to 1, you know, acts of kindness and affection and sweetness and love for every negative interaction. Minimum 5. When it gets below that, you're in the trouble zone. So, you know, just the, and one person can't do it. Like one person shifting is going to change a relationship. And I've coached husbands and I've coached wives who were in marriages that were like, one foot out the door, really not sure. And they fell back in love because the person I was coaching had that like, oh my God, I'm in love and I feel so loved by that, like, that relationship with their money honey, their imaginary money honey. They very often say to me, I feel like I'm cheating on my spouse with this imaginary person, which I love because you can't have sex with your imaginary person, but you can take that erotic energy to your partner and the partner feels it. Also, I had one woman years ago, Kirsten, who said that she was getting from her money honey the stuff that she couldn't get from her husband that really wasn't his job to provide. Like she had this sense of, you know, unconditional love and just a, she was getting this fill, this kind of perfection from her money honey so she could let her husband be who he was. And they fell back in love because he wasn't feeling criticized. He wasn't feeling rejected. He was feeling appreciated and loved as he was. And he started making more money and she was making more money and they just, it took the pressure off. Like one of the biggest things I learned by growing up and becoming an adult is who you have is what you get. And as a young woman, I loved potential. Sure, yeah. You're an addict living at home with anger management issues, but you're cute, and I and drug problems, and but I see the good side in you. You know that's a young person's mistake. Who you have in front of you, you just. Would I be happy with this person if this person didn't change for the next 20 or 50 years? Would I be okay with that? That's love. Some stranger hitting on me at a restaurant in Bali, where I also lead my retreat, said the wisest thing to me like 10 years ago. And maybe everybody's heard this before, but I really love this as a touch point, which is that women fall in love hoping the man will change, and men fall in love with women hoping the woman will never change. And neither of them are going to get that.
No, I know. Yep.
Because you're a grown up. So that's why grown up love is so much better. By the way, ladies, there are so many more grown-up relationship-ready men when we're grown up. Like the young boys are going to be into you too. And the much older guys are going to be into you too. But there's going to be the sweet spot, wherever that is for you, of grown-up relationship-ready men who have already made a ton of really stupid, idiotic mistakes and don't want to repeat those mistakes and learn something along the way, just like you. And that is the best time to date and meet a lifetime partner, you know, because you know who you are and what you need, and you know how to respect another person and what they need, and you can really work it out. And it's a lot more fun because you're grownups and you can do what you want.
Yeah. I only have one last question for you.
Okay.
It's something I ask everybody. But because this podcast is, you know, specifically talking to, you know, people in darker places, but what can a doomer start to do to get back onto the path of becoming a bloomer, life, business, and relationships? Your best advice.
Absolutely. Start where you are. Start where you are. Like all the doomer stuff, you get to use it. I mean, that's why I call my work alchemy, because alchemy is the art of transmuting lead into gold. Lead in human experience is where you get the gold. The monster is just as important as the honey, because the monster is how you get to the honey. It's like a slingshot. So you want to use it. So there is, you've already paid the price of admission, you know? So you don't need to continue suffering. Just, you know, extract the treasure from this experience. You know, you've worn it out. You could write a PhD on this thing. Honestly, this pattern is kind of tired of you too and is ready to go. So I would say be courageous in diving into the root cause and creating your monster. Make the bad experiences work for you. It's not that you failed at anything. I had a teacher who said, it's not your fault, but it's your responsibility. And I love that because it means you have the ability to respond. So the six steps, and I use it for money, but I also use it for love monsters in my life and with clients. You can use it with health monsters. You can use it with life monsters, God monsters, success monster, whatever has the most energy for you. But you know, you just line up like a lawyer making a case against the world and existence and your life. And that's step number one. Is I didn't really get as specific into it because I'm trying to cram 20 years of content into 1 hour, and there's no way that I'm going to get to all of it. So forgive me. I'm trying to like force feed you like a French goose, which is also not kind. So take a deep breath. You'll go to my website afterwards where you can repeat this stuff at a easier pace. You can re-listen to this podcast because you're only going to take away about 5% of what I'm putting into this. But step number one, uncover the root cause of your money monster. And it's never going to be about money. Money is the symptom, not the cause. The real cause is any wounds around love, worth, safety, and power. Anything that ever made you feel powerless, unsafe, unworthy, or unloved, especially if it doesn't look like it has anything to do with money. Just check to see where the energy is. Step number two is personify the root cause as a monster. The bigger and badder, the better. Make it worth destroying, because step number three is you're going to get rid of it. And I'm saying this after having coached thousands of people, and every client teaches me how to make it better. In my experience, destroy it in the most dramatic way possible, you know. In my tribe, a lot of love and light spiritual vegan types. So this is weird, you know, sometimes for like my people to hear. But, you know, be the sacred warrior. Be Durga from India. Be Saint Michael from the West. But slay the monster. Reject everything that you don't want to have a place in your life experience, and make it all gone. That's step number three. Step number four is you meet your hot, beautiful, romantic money honey. It does work best if it's a romantic person, because lovers are equals. It's not God or Oprah way up here. It's somebody who loves you, who is your partner, because you're in the body. You still have a life to live and your work in the world to do. Step four, meet your money, honey. Step five, have a conversation with your money, honey. Step six is take concrete, measurable action. The kind of thing is, if we were to get on the phone in 5 days, I could say, did you do it? That's important because action is magical. And if you want real world tangible results, you need to take real world tangible action to let yourself know that the dynamic has changed. I didn't really go deeply into how to know what the right action is, but all that stuff is in my book, Financial Alchemy. And if you don't want to buy anything and you want to dig around on my website, I've got hundreds of articles and videos for free on my website at morganaray.com. And a good place to start on my website is with my money love quiz. Or you can skip it. If you can't find it on my website, it is on the homepage if you scroll down. It's also available at doesmoneyloveyou.com. And that just, it's a really pain-free, easy-peasy self-assessment of where you are on your journey. There's nothing bad. It's just, oh, you're here. Maybe you should start with this resource or this free action. Just based on where you are, it helps me curate what is the best next step for you. So that's what I would do now, is just start where you are and use what you have.
All right. Did you guys hear that, Doomers? MorganaRay.com and DoesMoneyLoveYou.com. I will put the links in all of the descriptions for this podcast. Any last words you'd like to say to your or to my audience?
Have compassion for yourself. I really, in my experience, change happens at the speed of safety. Make what you want safe. Find the monster, Get rid of the monster, and replace it with love.
I like that. All right. Thanks for tuning in, guys. As always, you can find the Doomer Boomer podcast on your favorite platform. We're on Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. This will be in a video format. So thank you, Morgana, for
clothes, and I can't waste it.
can't wait actually to get this podcast out. The energy was very great. And I just want to thank you again, Morgana, for coming on to the podcast.
Oh, it was so much fun. Thank you.
All right. Cheers, guys.